Hey, what's going on, everybody? I hope you're well. I hope you had a wonderful weekend, just a wonderful weekend. Anyway, before we get started, you know I have to drop a couple of shout-outs. This is a big one for shout-outs, guys. We had a lot of contest winners this week. So, headshot of the week, Miss Kara Payuk. I feel like I'm butchering that. Payuk? I think that would be it. I'm sorry, Kara, if I mispronounce your name. Anyway, this is a common problem for me. Anyway, she won Headshot of the Week for July 17th, so congratulations. And then on the portrait track for Headshot Crew, we had the portrait probe, Linda Chan. Kathy. Kathy Mukhopadhyay. Oh, God, that's a complicated one. I'll try it again. Kathy Mukhopadhyay. I hope that's it. She won portrait probe, and Linda Chan, she won portrait of the month. So congratulations. It was an all-female panel of winners this past week. That was good. Anyway, congratulations, all of you ladies. Very cool shots, and looking forward to seeing more of your work in the future. All right, guys, that's it. That's it when it comes to the shout-outs, so let's get down to it. So this week, this is a fun one. So at the beginning of the week, this being the past week, I launched a Facebook post asking for questions related to photography, and I picked up those questions and I put them in the podcast. So I might start doing this more often. So an audience Q&A, and I didn't want to do this by myself, so I brought in my good friend, my pal, my brother from another mother, Mr. Ben Markham, who's been on the podcast before. So he graciously came in and helped me answer these questions. All right, I hope you enjoy this week's podcast. Here we go.
All right, enough of that. Get over here. We're going to start right now. 3, 2, 1, shipping!
Here we go. We're going. Guys, we're live. Actually, we're not live. We're recording.
And this is historic. This is a historic podcast.
Why is this historic?
Because I am the first repeat guest.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's history.
Hmm.
I did just totally try to put myself over right there out of the gate, too. So
God,
you're welcome.
Damn. Why do you always do this, Ben? Oh, by the way, Ben, just so you know, because last time this wasn't really a thing, but this podcast is now explicit, so
it's explicit, so I can actually just talk like I talk and everything's good.
Feel free to. I should probably not have said that to you, though.
Probably not.
Live and learn. All right. So, yeah. Guys, so today we're doing audience Q&A. So we set up a Facebook post on the Headshot Crew Facebook group asking for any questions or topics related to photography, and people came through. So we got a bunch of questions, and I brought in Ben to
Hello, everyone.
Help me out. Oh, now you say hi?
Yeah, well, I had to talk about me first.
After plugging yourself?
Yeah, completely.
All right, so should we just jump into it? Straight into it. People know who you are.
Yeah.
People know who you are. You've been on the podcast before. You're a dear friend of mine. So, and by the way, thank you very much for being here with me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I hope you're drinking heavily just as I am.
Not heavily. You know, it's only, like 6 o'clock where I am. So this is, first after work cocktail.
I'm drinking tea, by the way. I didn't specify.
Yeah, I'm having a nice dirty vodka martini.
Oh, so good for
you. If anyone would like my recipe, let me know. I'll take care of you.
All right, let's get started. So let's start off with David H. Smith and his question. This is more of a topic. He's saying, obtaining new clients, exclamation point.
That always seems to be one of the first go-tos.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? You're the host of this thing. You jump in.
Right. So this is a very tough topic to discuss because it depends on your market, it depends on what you're already doing. So what I found is most photographers, there's a trend nowadays of photographers just set up a website and then they just sit on their desk waiting for the phone to ring. And in reality, the amount of work that you're going to get, like organic leads that you're going to get through that is going to be very small, right? Would you agree with that, Ben?
Wholeheartedly.
Right. So there's a bunch of stuff that you can do to boost your business. Number one would be, networking. I was going to say marketing, but I was like, yeah, networking. Two different words. Getting yourself known. I can't remember exactly who gave me this tip, but when it comes to networking, the best way to network, let's say you go to a network event, is instead of walking up to people and say, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm a photographer and here's what I do. Like, instead of doing that, the best thing you could do is actually ask people about them. So show interest in them, and naturally they will show interest in you as well. And if you do that for everybody you meet at a networking event, because let's be honest, everybody goes to a networking event to market themselves, right?
Right.
Right. So everybody just wants the foot in the door. Everybody wants the chance to go, hey, I'm so and so, but nobody wants to say it because everybody's afraid to say that. So if you give people that chance, they will remember you and they will be grateful that you gave them that you opened up the window for them.
I'm gonna jump in there for a second, because like talking just like about networking events themselves, me personally, like I hate networking events. I hate them with a passion. Like, they always feel like everyone that I've ever been to, they always feel like just people trying to sell product to each other, or you know, how can I make you a client or whatever. And it's just what you're saying. I've never felt like there's actual relationships being built. So because it's important, and I'm bad at networking, I don't do nearly as much of it as I should. It's what I prefer is if I can get with groups of friends or going somewhere where I know people already, and someone can help make introductions for me and help start conversations, right, or helping start conversations for them. You know, it's because it's got to be, you know, give and take. You just can't take the entire time. But I just wanted to interject that, because just networking events themselves, just I don't like them. They just meh. So sorry, yeah, to sidetrack you.
No, it's perfectly fine. I mean, it is an uncomfortable scenario. Everybody's there for business, right? And nobody's really there to know people. You're not going there to build relations. Well, you should be there because
that's where like better business is going to happen. It's just like if you go on Facebook and just post, you know, go book a headshot, then you're not going to book anything. There was no relationship built. You were just basically trying to sell right out of the gate. And like, you don't like being sold to, right? So if people get to know you and they feel like they can trust you, and it's a process, you know, but once people trust you, they're more likely to buy from you. You know, like I've never had somebody come like leave a flyer on my front door for like lawn service and me just be like, oh, well, there's a flyer on my front door, so I'm gonna call them. You know, it's like I haven't seen their work. I don't know them. I don't trust them.
Right. Well, that's where what I was referring to, like ask about the other people, like show interest in them, and they will feel like, oh, this person is actually, they're not trying to sell anything. They're just trying to build a relationship here, which is essentially what you should be doing anyway. But then you're building that trust and you're not being sales pitchy or anything. So I don't remember who gave me that tip for networking events, but I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's like any networking that I do, and I learned this the hard way, it's like I don't go into any of it anymore with the intention of trying to close a sale at that event. It's not about closing for me at that point. It's getting to know people so that I'm in their brain, you know, and we become friends. Like I've had things from networking events where people go, let's just go grab a cup of coffee later. And we just go grab a cup of coffee and just hang out and chat for half an hour. But now there's relationship. And then when we see each other at other things, it's building. It's all about foundation stuff.
All right. What would be your main tip for getting new clients?
I don't know if I have a main tip, you know, there, because there's so many different parts of it. I mean, referrals are huge for me. Building relationship with current clients. I just did it with a client today, you know, a client that I've been working with since I was working out of my house and their business was still working out of their house. And now just, you know, because of the way the universe works, the building that my studio in is right next door to their buildings. Like, we've both grown together, which is just kind of fun. But in an email exchange today, while we were talking about me shooting some of their new hires, I asked for referrals. I was just like, you know, hey, I'm in a, you know, doing some growth stuff right now. And if there's, you know, anybody in your network that you think that could use some better headshots for their stuff, I would really like those referrals. And if you can help me make some connections, that would be great. So there's that, which is still a form of networking as well. And of course, your website and your SEO and all that is important. You know, it's going to get work for you. But man, relationships, that's so much more of it. And good work. I mean, you can build all the relationships that you want all day, but if your work's not there yet, it's going to be harder. So you have to constantly work at that. You know, it's like there's no one thing. There's so many spokes on the wheel.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that would be step one. Make sure whatever it is that you're selling is good.
Well, and like, put out the best work that you can put out right now. I think we talked about this on the last podcast I was on. It's like, I started without knowing anything. I wasn't good. And so all I could do was put out the best work that I could put out right then. But then as I got better, I got rid of the old work. And so I, you know, only show your best. You know, if that means you've only got 5 shots on your website, then only have 5 shots on your website. You know, I'd rather see somebody only have 5 really great shots out there than like 1 good one and a bunch of mediocre.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Market your best stuff. Is it worth talking about marketing when it comes to getting new clients? Any sort of marketing strategies?
Marketing is important. It's like, I've hit a point where I've actually just hired a marketing person, you know, marketing's hard, you know, and there's a lot of moving pieces there. But it took me, you know, what, 5 years, 6 years, how long have I been doing this, to get to a point to where I could hire a marketing person. Marketing is important. You've got to be in front of people and it's what sort of marketing. I know people still bitch about Facebook and the whole pay-to-play thing. And I talked about that in my class at Headshot Mania. Like, I don't have a problem with Facebook being pay-to-play for businesses because it's, you know, they're a business. They're trying to make money. And for the cost to actually market on Facebook is still like the cheapest you're going to find to get in front of the most amount of eyes. You just have to figure out how to do it correctly. And that's challenging, targeting your right markets. But I have no problem with marketing or with marketing on Facebook and social. I think it's cost effective.
Exactly. All right. So yeah, those are good tips for getting new clients, David. I hope that helps answer your question. That was David H. Smith. And the reason why I say this is because the next question is from another David. David Lee is asking, and this is a long question. David's saying, I think pricing would be a topic that I find myself revisiting constantly. I'd started with providing fine art prints, etc. to my clients prior to focusing on headshots. My images at the moment start at $275 and go up from there. My portrait packages start at $1,200 for 6, so for headshots, I only cut that in half and offer 3 images for $600, and additional images at $200 a piece. This is really confusing.
Okay, so I know David's stuff, and I feel his pain, and here's why. So he's trying to run a portrait business, and he's trying to run a headshot business, and he's trying to run 2 separate pricing models to make it work. The portrait side being one thing, the headshot side being another.
Right.
I feel this pain because I do it. End of the day, it depends on who you talk to and how comfortable you are and what you're comfortable telling your prices to be. Because like if you were to go to somebody and go, I do a $3,000 headshot package, and you're wishy-washy about it, you're never going to sell that $3,000 headshot package, as opposed to if you're very confident and your work can back it up, you can charge that $3,000 for a package. And you have to know your area and blah, blah, blah. Really, here's what a lot of stuff comes down to. It's like, know what you have to make to keep your doors open, and like how many sessions you want to shoot, and then what that's going, you know, what you have to charge for each of the, like, say you only want to shoot 5 shoots a week. What do you have to charge for each of those 5 headshot shoots to keep your doors open and to make the kind of money that you need to be making to live or right. be happy, you know? So like, and then, you know, there's a school of thought that I don't necessarily disagree with, and I don't know that I have the guts to do this yet, that goes, no, you set your portrait, you set everything at the same thing. Your portrait thing and headshot thing and whatever, it's all the same stuff. You do it at the same prices. You know, shooting straight and being honest, I'm not there yet. My headshot prices versus my portrait prices are very different, you know, but I'm comfortable with it, and I can sell each of them at those various price points.
Right. Let me just finish his question here. He's saying, blah, 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 blah. Headshot clients seem to like this structure and purchase between 3 and 12 images. Now, here's the kicker. My sitting fee is super low at only $150, which 75 will go to makeup, and if they wanted hair, the other 75 would go to that. So that's his cost. The cost for somebody to be there is $150. Is that it? Is that what he means?
That's what it sounds like.
Okay. Clients seem not to be intimidated by the sitting fee, and then I can have them fall in love with their images when it comes to my profit. Wait, so you're telling them what your sitting fee is? So you're charging the $150 in addition to the rate?
There were a lot of numbers in his stuff, so I was having a hard time following you talking through it. But so, like, let's take it to my portrait stuff. For my portrait sessions, which I charge very differently than I do for my headshot work, it's a $300 sitting fee to come in for a portrait session. A good chunk of that goes to my makeup artist. Another good chunk of that goes to my retoucher, and then there's product. So on my sitting fee by itself, I don't make a profit at all. Like, I make nothing to shoot the session. Everything comes down to what I sell on the back end. And it's a gamble. And when you first get going, it's a really scary gamble. But when you start doing those kinds of sales at those kind of prices, what, he's charging $225 for an image? Is that what he said?
My images at the moment start at $275.
So, you know, he sells a couple images, you know, if he's making profit.
Right.
So I guess I'm not really sure what his question is at this point. It sounds like he's got it figured out for what's working for him.
He's saying, I provide all this info because I know that other crew members are more at a $400 sitting fee. Then they make the client pay for makeup, and then the images start at $100 a piece or so. Yeah, that's what I do. I have a rate that they pay for my work, and they pay for extra images too. I mean, I have a couple of images that are included in the package, and makeup is separate. So if they want makeup, they pay the makeup artist separately.
Yeah, and it's I know from where he's getting his pricing models. And I don't disagree with those pricing models. But if you're not comfortable charging that for the product, you're never going to sell it. And that's really what it comes down to. And it's like there's a multi-headed beast with this sort of pricing. It's A, you have to charge enough to keep your doors open and to make the kind of money that you want to make. but then you also have to be comfortable charging those prices or you're never going to sell them, because people feel that anxiety coming from you. So he has gotten comfortable with his pricing structure and charging those prices. And so he's, you know, it sounds to me like he's rocking it, which is awesome.
Right. No, if it works for you, it works for you. Speaking of pricing, I read something today regarding pricing, and it was very interesting. And it's mostly about mindset regarding, like, your mindset when it comes to pricing. So there's a lot of misconceptions about, and it's, if we really think about it, it's kind of stupid, because a lot of photographers go, I'm not getting any work. This is probably because my rates are too high. And they take like $50 from the rate, right? Let's say you're charging $250, right? And you go, maybe my rates are too high. That's why I'm not getting any work. And you take the $50 away. So now it's just $200. Do you really think that a client who is willing to pay $250 is like, they're not willing to pay $250, but they're willing to pay $200? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like a $50 difference is nothing. It doesn't matter. You know, now if you're starting to talk like thousands of dollars, that's going to make a bigger difference. But I honestly, every time I've raised my prices, I've gotten more clients.
Same here.
You know, and there's going to be a limit to that, I think, on one-on-one headshot shoots. No. Per your you know, your area. It's like, you know, I live in Louisville, Kentucky, which is going to be a very different rate than I think New York City is going to be. Just the cost of living is different. Right. So I think that is a variable that you have to take in. You're hearing my wife yell at my cat. So
I hear that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, so if you want to follow my cat's Instagram, it's okay. Neville R. Nelson. There you go. Neville, I just got you a cheap plug, buddy. Yeah, but no, but you know, like $50 at the end of the day is nothing. You know, like they don't notice it. It's not going to make or break your business.
Right. And it's mostly about if you're not getting clients through the door, most of the times it's not because of your prices. It's because of what you're doing to get those clients. So maybe you're just not working hard enough to get people to notice you. Right.
I agree. You know, and I think there's some seasonality to things. I mean, it's
sure.
You know, so, but you've got to be prepared for those seasonalities as well, which isn't always easy. Like a summer in my area is slow for a lot of service professionals and freelancers. You know, I've talked to several in different fields and everybody goes, yeah, you know, June, July are slow because people are coming and going from vacations and getting ready for school. So you've got to be prepared for those things, but it'd be, if you're thinking your prices are too high by $50, don't worry about it.
Yeah, you'll be fine. All right, so bottom line, don't be too concerned about the prices. And I would say to try to simplify as much as you can. Try to make it as simple as possible for your client to understand how much they're going to pay at the end of the entire process, right?
Yeah, don't confuse them. And it's, you know, I'm going to quote Sue Bryce here and go, you know, she says, a confused mind says no. And that's exactly, if you throw 5 million prices at them, well, you know, if this, then that, and if this, and this, and this, and this, and this, people can't, they see too much information. They just say no when they walk away. So keep it really simple, you know, if X, then Y, done.
Exactly. All right, so let's move on. Thank you, David, for your question. Thank you to both Davids for your questions. Moving on, John Yeatman Jr.'s asking, what are people working in for studio sizes in terms of dimensions and required considerations in seeking a new space? Please, this is actually a perfect topic for both you and me because you've recently moved and I'm in the process of moving to a bigger studio. So let's start with you. What would you, when you decided to move, what was your main factor in moving, and did you move into a bigger studio, and if so, why?
And there's so many things to tackle there. So let me start at the beginning. It's like when I first started doing this, like my first workspace was my kitchen, and I had to make it work, you know. So it's like you will figure out a way to make a small space do what you have to do. And then we moved to a new house, and I had a bedroom that was about 150, 200 square feet ish. And that was my studio. You know, so hair and makeup happened there. My editing happened there. My shooting happened there. I made it work. I went associate working out of that bedroom, quite frankly. And then my first studio, like out of the house, like that was mine. It was just a big room, like, and it was what, like 20 by 15 with, so it felt like a bowling alley when I was shooting. But I had plenty of room for doing headshots and not doing stuff. But then I'll go on location. So like I've done my headshots and gotten the same look in a 10 by 10 conference room with a table pushed up against the wall. And those. So I guess what I'm getting at there is like the size is only so relevant when I'm actually doing the work. So the studio that I just moved into, I upgraded. I went from about 800 square feet in my last studio to about 1200 square feet in my new studio. My actual shooting space is smaller. I don't have as much depth as I did in the other one, but it's fine. Like that's not been an issue. A lot of what I was doing is I was moving to a better location, a much, you know, hipper kind of part of downtown. But then I was also, because of what I'm trying to do with my brand and my portraiture and that sort of thing, is I want a certain vibe out of my space, because I think my space is a representation of what I do. So I wanted a seating area that felt a certain way, and I wanted makeup to have their own space, and I wanted a separate changing room that was its own thing, and I wanted my office to be separated out from that, so that when clients were in makeup or getting changed or whatever, they didn't have to deal with me and having to worry about making awkward small talk and all that sort of thing. So that was really a important part of the experience of coming to work with me. It's all just how they feel and how comfortable they are. And if I can do that in a 200 square foot space, great. And if I need 1200 to do it, great. I ultimately want to be in a warehouse space that's huge, but that's goals down the way.
Right. So I've had a similar experience. So my first ever studio space was my mom's living room. Yeah. And I did most of my learning was done in that living room. So thank you, Mom, for letting me set up a studio in your living room. And
thanks, Mom.
Yeah, my mom's the best. Well, moms are the best in general. And then I was very lucky to go to New York for a while and work in Peter's studio. And then when I came back to Portugal, it just felt wrong to go back to my mom's living room. So I decided to find a space, and I was very lucky because I had a group of actors who had a rehearsal space, and they had extra space that they weren't using. So they asked me if I was interested in taking that. So I took it. And it was a pretty big space for shooting. It was like, and this is the problem because I'm on metrics, so I'm converting square meters to square feet as we speak. Hold on. It was 70 square meters, which is roughly 750 square feet for shooting.
So I'm going to trust your math.
Yeah. I mean, no, I'm trusting Google with my math. Anyway, and then, unfortunately, that space got sold, so I had to leave that studio space. And right now, the space that I'm in is very small. It's like an office space that I converted to a studio space, but it's very small. It's got like 350 square feet, so it's half of what I used to have. Which is fine for my headshot work, but I've been doing a lot of portraiture lately, and I'm really focused on commercial and editorial photography right now. So I just need a bigger space, and I had been researching online, and everything was a little bit out of my budget and very expensive because Lisbon right now is like booming.
So, good problems.
Yeah, I mean, rent prices are going insanely high. And so I decided, you know what? I'm just gonna figure it out. And plus, my lease was about to renew, so there wasn't much I could do. I would be stuck. I was gonna be stuck in my current space for another year. And as I closed my computer, I went to lunch. I closed my computer and I went to lunch. And as I'm leaving, my studio space is in a little gallery of shops, right, outdoors. And the guy in front of my studio walks up to me and says, "Hey, do you know anybody that's looking for a big office space?" And I'm like, maybe. What you got?" He goes, "Well, we have this architecture. We're this architecture firm, and we've been here for 40 years. And we used to be 15, and now we're just 2. So we were looking for a smaller space, but, you know, we're leaving this space." It's like, "Can I see it?" "Sure." And he goes, "Sure. So walk on in." I walk into the space, and it's absolutely perfect for a studio. It's got massive roofs. It's got a mezzanine. I just went nuts on it. And I asked him.
I love that the mezzanine was your sell on that.
Dude, a mezzanine.
No, if I had a mezzanine, I'd be over the moon. I'm not judging.
And the other thing too is, since right now, like, everything is in one room. Like, the makeup table is pressed up against the back, like the seamless backdrops, because I really have no space. I have a bathroom. I have a closet. But I can barely fit. It's so small that I can barely fit my entire gear cannot fit in there. So I have stuff. And here's the problem too, is that because of the portraiture that I'm developing, I'm accumulating a lot of props that I have no room for. So they're just sticking around. And here's the other thing too, is when you're shooting a portrait setup and then you want to switch it up on a small space, you have to move light stands out of the way. You have to move props. There's a lot of work that needs to be done on a smaller space. So anyway, this space is like 3 times larger and it's the same landlord. So we just do a new contract. So I don't have to stay here for another year. It's like the perfect solution. So yeah, it came out of a necessity. So, and this space, I would say, is like, hold on, it's probably like 90 square meters, which translates to roughly 1,000, yeah, like 1,000 square feet, which for me right now is, it's good. Yeah, it's a good space.
Yeah, so back to the original question, you know, it's like, so what should you be looking for in shooting space? Something comfortable. So it depends on what you're going to do. Like, if you're just going to shoot headshots, you don't need as much area. If you're going to do more, then you do need some more space. And for me, a lot of it was, like I say, about the experience. So I needed that space to set it out and I want it to feel like home. So make your vibe what you want it to be.
Absolutely. You know? It absolutely depends on what you're doing. Because for me, because I'm doing more commercial work where I'm working with bigger teams and stylists and makeup artists and more portrait subjects and whatnot, having a team of 7 people, having 7 people in a 300 square foot space is...
That's tight.
It's tight, yeah. Yeah, I just did that last Tuesday and everybody was like, so when do you move? It's like August.
Not soon enough.
Not soon enough, man. I can't wait. Anyway, so if you're just doing headshots, yeah, I mean, 300 square feet, that worked for me headshots.
But start where you need to start too. I mean, the thing to remember is, like, if you get into a space now, it doesn't have to be your final space. You know, it's like, I just signed a 3-year lease in my current place. I love my space. I love being there, but it's not my final destination either. You know, so as my business has grown, my studio has grown as well. So get what you need to get started and then know that you've got a plan to keep growing.
Right. Exactly. All right. I hope that helps, John. Moving on. Claudia has a couple questions. Her main question is, what attracts you in a portrait? Not a headshot, a portrait. That's a tough question.
No, it's not. It's not a tough question at all. It's because a headshot is a portrait. So it's the same thing. And what attracts me is the connection and or the story that it tells. It's like what of that subject draws me in and makes me want to stare at it. And if a portrait, headshot, portrait, whatever, doesn't draw me in, then I don't care. It's as simple as that.
I guess that wasn't complicated at all.
No, I'm on top of it. I'm there.
Ooh, this is a good question. This is a good question. And it's a good question for the both of us because we're on the separate spectrums here. Claudia is asking, many people are now showing a bit of the studio environment when shooting a portrait, like the edges of the backdrop and surroundings. Why and how would that be interesting? And why and how would that be distracting or too busy or not interesting? Or how does it help building the image? Also, what kind of backdrops would you prefer for portraits or for each type of portrait and why? So why this? You tend to not do that. I tend to love having the...
It depends, though. I do it. It depends on the story that I'm telling at a time. It's like I put it on an image of a couple. Lord, was that like 8 months ago, 9 months ago? Where I very much had a lot of stuff going on the side of my drops. But there's a lot that, like, I don't just arbitrarily go, okay, I'm going to show the side of my drops or, you know, my light stands or whatever. Like, it has to be a part of the story to make sense. You know, like I'm not just hitting a button and hoping for the best. I'm telling a story frame by frame. So if the light stands and all the crap in my studio behind it doesn't make sense, then I'm not going to show it. But if it enhances the story, then yeah, it's going to be there.
Sure. And here's the thing too. I shoot a lot with that stuff in frame for two reasons. Main reason is because I like seeing it, because I fell in love with that look. Second reason is I have a 300-foot square studio.
Make it work.
I really can't. I mean, there's not much room, right? So I'm going to get stuff in the frame. It is what it is. So I just came to peace with it, and I learned to love it. Learned to make it interesting, right? Now, when I move to the bigger studio, I'll probably still do it. Maybe not as often, but I'll probably still do it. Or maybe I'll do it differently. I'll do it deliberately, probably. Now, sometimes it happens on accident, and I love it. But yeah, I think Ben is right. It very much depends on the story you're trying to tell. Regarding the backdrops, I think she's trying to talk about textured canvas backdrops versus solids. I tend to go for the textured ones. I paint my own. I enjoy them nowadays more than ever. And I keep telling myself, you know, what would happen if I started using these for my headshot work? Because I've always been very clean, very perfectionist when it came to my headshot work. But I keep revisiting the idea of, you know, let's just walk over to the dark side for a little bit. Stop being so clean and so perfect.
So why don't you do both? Like, why don't you, like, you know, do what has, you know, brought you to the dance and shoot the clean and get that in there. But then once you know you've got that in the can, which at this point I think you can probably do pretty quickly, then once you've got that at the end of a session, walk somebody over to the dark side and shoot some of that. And now you've got it. You've got both, and you can see how you feel about it. And if you end up hating it, you don't have to do it anymore, but you get to try it.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing lately. But
good.
I don't really show it because I want whenever I'm ready to show that others, that other product, because I think of my headshot work as a product, right? It's a product. It's a final product. Like, it's that style, it's that formula, right? That's the way I think about my headshot work. So if I'm going to change it and I'm going to advertise and I'm going to market something else, then I need to make sure that I have a good body of whatever it is that I need to have a good product in addition to the product that I have right now.
But at the end of the day too, like, say you started putting those out on Instagram, right? So end of the day, and you know, we talk about this all the time, the background isn't what's important in our headshots. What's important in our headshots is the person.
Right.
It's the emotion, it's the connection, it's the blah. If I'm paying attention to what your background is, like whether it's a white or a gray or a, you know,
yeah,
a
you
Parker
failed.
Backdrop or whatever, like if you're looking at my backdrop, I screwed up.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. I start rolling some of it out, see what happens.
That's a good point. I mean, I put it on the latest shot that I put on Instagram is at the time of the recording, by the way. If you're watching this 3 months from now, that's not the latest shot I just put up. Did I say watch this? If you're watching this, there's nothing to watch. If you're listening, that's what I meant. Anyway.
We could start doing these on Twitch.
Yeah, sure. Why not? What do we got to lose? It did have it was with a canvas backdrop, but what I'm saying is I'm not going to put it on my website.
No, you don't have to start it on your website until you've got a portfolio. But okay, so here's my challenge to you. I'm going to, by the end of next week, and what's today? So I don't care. By the end of next week, I want to see one of these with one of your canvas backdrops up on your Instagram. Because what have you got to lose?
You could go on Instagram right now and see one of them.
We'll put two more.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got them. No, you're going to mess up my buffer. I use Buffer for all my social media, and it's like everything's planned till the end of July.
So just replan.
Why? Just wait till August, Ben.
Patience is not a virtue that I am good that I have. I'm not good at it. I don't know.
That's been established. All right, let's move on. Thank you, Claudia, for your questions. Janie Haas is asking, how about selling clients on all the uses for headshots and explaining the difference between a headshot and a portrait? Ben, what you got?
How about it? I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, a headshot is a portrait. So it's and what I take from that question is, why not try to upsell them into personal branding stuff? To which I go, yeah, do that. And there are people who I know. Anita Watkins is a great example. She upsells people into personal branding sessions like crazy and makes a lot of money doing it. So if you can do it, do it. Upsell, get the headshots, get the personal branding, do it all day long.
Right. At the end of the day, like, we like to make the distinction. People don't care. They're just going to look at your work and go, that's good. I want that. Yep. Right. If your work is not there, if it's not for them, it's not for them. And you need to have work that's for that everybody wants. Right. Now, that's tough because not everybody is going to want the same thing, obviously, but that most people will want. So regarding selling clients on the uses for headshots, I think it's changing. People, more and more people nowadays are realizing that they need a good and they need a good picture. One of the things that you could do is ask. That's a sensitive subject. Would you go as far, Ben, as to ask if your clients don't share your shots on social media, would you ask them to share it?
Not now. Not at all. Yeah, I'm not going to call a client and be like, please share my stuff, because that looks weird and desperate.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's, you know, and it create work they want to share and they're going to share it. Yeah, and ooh, and they may credit you and they may not, and you've got to be okay with that, because like if a paying client puts out an image that you created and doesn't tag you, if you send them a message and go, oh, don't forget to tag me. You kind of look desperate and weird, and it's going to be off-putting to that client. So don't do that.
To that point, though, I just remembered something from a previous podcast when I talked to Maurice Yager, and he was saying, and it's absolutely true, and it applies to this case, where it doesn't, well, let's forget about if the client shares it. When you share it, don't just go, oh, blah, blah, blah was in my studio and we took pictures for their hot dog business. When are you scheduling a session? Schedule now! Exclamation point. Instead of doing that, tell their story. Like share yeah. their, write about, it was great having this person. It was awesome hearing about their cat. And we laughed about a hot dog being stolen by a pigeon. You know, just tell, I don't know what that story is, but just tell their story and share the story that you guys had together in the studio. Don't just be sales pitchy. That way.
No, but not only that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Not that sorry. it's like, you know, you're creating these things for people to go up because headshot's a marketing tool, you know, where it's, that's the difference between a headshot and a portrait in my world. One's a marketing tool and, you know, one's about legacy. So if you're creating this marketing tool for somebody and they go out and they have a success with it, they get cast in a show or a TV show or whatever, or they get a job because their stuff was on LinkedIn. Or their headshot was on LinkedIn, then celebrate that. You know, do a post about that and be like, hey, and not it has nothing to do with your headshot. You don't go in there and be like, oh, because of my headshot, so-and-so got cast in a play on blah, whatever.
Exactly.
It's congratulations. You know, I met this person and I'm so happy for them. And celebrate for them. You know, that you get to know them and then they win. That's awesome. So celebrate it.
Exactly. So there you go. So Janie, I hope that helps. Shay Swinford. Oh, Shay Swinford. Who doesn't love Shay Swinford?
Shay is awesome. Hi, Shay.
Shay's saying, what makes headshot photographers different from other headshot photographers? And then she's saying a bunch of descriptions why headshot photographers are better. Then I don't really want to go there. I mean, there's no need to go there. So let's let that be the question. What makes headshot photographers different from other? What makes headshot crew photographers different from other headshot photographers? I think the main thing that headshot crew people get and the way they stand out is control of their clients. You know, anybody can learn good light. You know, the concepts of light, have been around for generations now. They've been around for centuries now. You can go learn them right now. You can stop listening to this and go learn lighting concepts and understand light and understand how it works and apply that, right? There hasn't been really nobody telling you what to say to people to get good expressions out of them. And that's really the difference. To me, that's the main difference between headshot crew photographers and other headshot photographers. Anything else, so, Ben?
Yeah, and it's like I agree with your lighting thing. I don't care what lighting somebody uses. I don't care if you use strobes or a flex kit or natural or whatever. I don't care. As long as the light is good, the light is good. End of the day, that's it. The benefit that we have in headshot crew, it's not even so much exactly what we say. Like there's no set thing that I say to every person that comes in, but it's becoming confident in how I get to know a person. And because if I don't get to know them, if I don't connect with them, or to borrow from, you know, Peter's teachings and the book and such, Sherlock Holmesing them, to get to know them so I know how to coach them and how to build them up, then I'm never going to get a shot. So that's what sets, not even sets us apart, but it's what gives us an edge. We learn those things so we can build and grow and build relationships with our clients and create images that like unlike anything they've ever seen before.
Here's the other thing too. A lot of people have asked, oh, I got the book, or, oh, I got this DVD. So I have the information that you guys talk about in the crew. So why would I join? Here's what you need to realize is that once you record a DVD or once you write a book, that information is frozen in time until you revisit that with a version 2 or a second edition or whatever, right? What the benefit of being in the crew is, as Peter because Peter is constantly developing these concepts and coming up with new stuff and eliminating stuff that doesn't work anymore for him. As he develops these new ideas, you are getting them firsthand. You don't have to wait for the newest DVD, which probably only comes out in a couple of years, or you don't have to wait until he writes another book. You're getting the information now, which is exactly when you need it.
But it's not only that, you know, it's like, I'm not Peter Hurley, you know, and I'm not Ryan Parker, and I'm not, you know, I'm not you, I'm not Maurice, I'm not, you know, whatever. And so how I interact with people is going to be entirely different than how any of anybody else interacts with people.
Right.
What it's really done from it, it's a confidence level thing and getting comfortable with going, I have to interact with people. And here's some foundational stuff that you can, you know, start with to get you going. But it was really developing me as a confident human being to be able to interact with other human beings while I'm working with a tool, the camera, that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. You know, and I'm breaking it down to the simplest forms there, but it's like, that's what it was. It's making me confident working with my tool to get the best thing out of my subject.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. All right, Shay, I hope that answers your question. Sandra is asking, does anyone license their images for commercial use so as to get paid more if the images are used in a $1 million billboard campaign? Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes, you need to do that. You need to figure, and I have made this mistake, I was going to say many years ago. It wasn't really that long ago. I had just started doing photography, and I had a friend of mine that had an advertising agency, and they were doing a big shoot for a national campaign, like a campaign ad. And they asked me if I was interested in shooting, and I was very green. So I said, yeah, sure. And they asked me my price, and I gave them what at the time I thought was a very high price for what I thought should, you know, they should pay for that. And they just, you know, I gave them a final price. I just told them, just pay me this for my services. And I am guessing that those people in that ad agency just everybody just threw themselves in the air and just everybody celebrated because they just grabbed a sucker. They were like, we can't believe that this idiot just did this, because they didn't pay any extra licensing. They didn't pay any, like, it was just a flat fee for me shooting the campaign and it was done, right? That's the standard. So if that's the standard, go with the standard. Ben?
Yeah. I mean, know what you can license for. I send a contract for every headshot client that I do, and it very much spells out what they can use their headshot for. And you know, if they're gonna go do a billboard or a book or whatever, then we're gonna renegotiate the things. But I also have clients who go, hey, I'm gonna use this on a billboard. And I go, great. Well, that's gonna cost X for, you know, this many billboards for this amount of time. And so, yeah, I license, because I don't make my money off of the shoots. I make my money off the stuff on the other side of it. It's a business. It's not just us hitting the button. And I got to give props, quite honestly, to Clay Cook for teaching me that early on. You know, I came up in at a time when he was really hitting his stride, and we had talks, and he's like, no, you get the license and make money. And I was like, oh, hey, look at that. So it's like, no, license your images for what they're worth and what you can do. Like, you know, yeah, I could go on for days about this now, but yeah, licensing, do it.
By the way, off topic, I just got Clay's F-stoppers tutorial. Oh my God.
Is it great? I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you got to watch it. That thing is so good. Man, Clay, if you're listening to this, and of course you are, come on. Of course you are. What else are you doing? Great job. Congratulations. It was amazing. I learned a ton. I got to get him on the podcast.
Your network connection's going to crap. What's going on?
Can you not hear me now?
Yeah, you're a little bit garbledy.
All right. It really doesn't matter because I'm recording my voice separately, so suck it up.
All right, then.
Anyway, Clay, if you're listening to this, let's talk. I want you on this podcast. Anyway, yes, licensing. Yes, that's the final answer. Speaking of contrast, you spoke of contracts. This is not really related to this, but it prompted this topic in my brain. Guys, if you have, if let's say that you have in your contract that the copyright is yours, and you're free to do whatever you want with the image, and that you can post it to promote your own business, right? And let's say you have a model release and everything, and the person agrees to it. And let's say you share their image on Instagram, and they come back to you saying, I don't really want you to share my image. Even though the contract says that you can do it, I would advise do the nice thing and do the right thing for your client, because ultimately, if you remove it, that client might go, huh, he was looking out for me. Let me go refer him to somebody else. Now, if you go, no, it's in the contract. I can do whatever I want with this image. You can't tell me not to use it. Guess who's not going to get any more referrals from that client? Would you agree, Ben?
I do. You know, customer service is key. And it's with like our normal clients. You know, like if I'm working with a big name celebrity, it may, like there's a lot of gray area there. But with most of my clients, and I've actually had a big name CEO for a major triad of fast food companies, his people asked me not to share his images on my stuff. I didn't share his images on my stuff because ultimately I want that company rather. That's more important to me than having his image on my Instagram.
Exactly. So customer service beats contract enforcement.
Yes.
All right, last but not... Oh, Sandra's question again. Sandra, last question. Do you have studio policies in place so it's easier to answer difficult questions? For as an example, I'd love to, however, we have a studio policy that prohibits giving away my work for free. She's kind of saying this in a joke. Do you have any studio policies like this, Ben?
I don't think so. I would need more specifics than that. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of,
it's very open-ended.
Yeah, I mean, studio policies like, I don't even know. Let me think. I don't know.
I want you to like email me specifics because I'm curious now.
Yeah, I would love to get like that.
I rarely say no unless I have to.
Yeah, I can't really imagine anything that a client would go, hey, can we do this?
And I would go, no, sorry, studio policy. I don't know.
I just had a client the other day say, can I bring my dog to a shoot? And I was just like, yeah, dogs are awesome. I don't have anything. I don't know.
Yeah, no dog policies.
Dogs are awesome. Bring your dogs to my studio. That's awesome.
I don't think I have any studio policies. Like people can do, you can do whatever you want. You come to my studio, you pay me money, do what you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Within reason. I reserve the right to say no to things.
Yeah, in sure. The moment. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, yeah, studio. Well, that's one of my studio policies is that in my okay. This is, I don't know if this is really answers your question, but let's say if I'm doing shoots for me, so I get the subjects and I collaborate with a makeup artist and a stylist and whatever, one of my studio policies in those shoots, not for paying clients, but for those shoots is my word is law. Whatever I say I want, for instance, if I want the dress in a certain way, if I want that model laying on the floor, then that model better be prepared, better be like hunching down as I say it. Like what I say is law. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I might rephrase it, but you know, but I mean, no, if there's a specific shot that I'm going for,
exactly.
Then, yeah. I want to get that shot.
That's what I mean. Yes.
I would also to caveat that say, I'm never going to force somebody to do something that would make them uncomfortable. And I don't think you meant that.
No.
But I just, you know, caveats and whatnot.
But yes. In hindsight, I should have probably worded that a little bit better.
It's okay. I covered you. It's fine.
Thank you, Ben. What I meant was if I'm going for a specific thing, I'm going for that specific thing. Right. And there's a lot of makeup artists and a lot of stylists that like to go, well, if we were now, I think it would look better like this. I don't need you announcing that in the studio because now the model thinks this photographer doesn't know what he's doing.
Yes. And those moments, if someone had, and I had that happen to me in the theater a lot, actually, let's reference back to the podcast. Was I 2 or 3 #cheap plug? but in my theater, if you know, go back and listen to my last podcast. It was phenomenal. Are you kidding me? In my theater life,
#primal bits.
If people like, let's say that I, as a sound designer, I played a sound in a room, and out of context, it may be blah, but in context, it actually does fit. And somebody screams across the room, "Oh, that sounds like the Millennium Falcon, you know, let's plug Star Wars, why not?" Then, you know, then now all anybody's going to hear is that. So if a makeup artist was to say, you know, "Oh, I think it would look better as this," and your model hears it, now that gets in their head, then that's all that's going to be there. So if those sorts of things start to happen, it's private conversations. It's, you know, "Hey, let me come here for a second." And it's pulling people aside as opposed to announcing to a room and then putting doubts in everybody's heads.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I meant is that.
And everything sounds like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That was the final question. I can't believe we got through it.
Did we actually get through all of them?
We did.
I thought there were more. Holy cow, dude. The headshot crew stopped slacking more.
All right, guys, we need more. We need more. We need more questions. I think I'll start doing one of these a month, like audience Q&As. These are fun.
I love them. And if you would like me to be a part of them, headshot crew, look at this cheap plug. Headshot crew, if you would like me to be a part of these Q&As, make sure Pedro knows. What can I just put myself over? You're welcome. I'm really just gunning for a co-host position on these things. That's
good,
all.
Good God, Ben Markham. Anyway, no decisions have been made. I need to consult with the higher powers.
Yeah, you run this thing. You are the higher power.
That's true. I have full creative control. That's what I tell myself.
I pitched earlier to do a co-interview with me and someone else who you need to reach out to interview you. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I've had a couple of people ask me that.
It'll be good. It's me and this nice helmeted gentleman. Be great to interview you.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how that podcast would start.
I got ideas.
All right, we got to wrap this up. It's kind of pointless to ask you where people can go to find out more about you, because you've mentioned it about 200 times in this hour.
Not on this one. On the crewcast that we did before this, I got in every single cheap plug, but all I'm right, not ben. Cheap plugged myself here.
Go nuts.
So if you guys want to see my headshot website, it is benmarkham.com. My portrait website, benmarkhamportraits.com. And you can find me on Instagram at benmarkhamphotos.
Photos?
Photo.
Oh, Ben.
No S.
Ben Markham Photo.
I failed at cheat plug.
Wow. You, of all people, should know how this is done.
At Headshot Mania 2, I would like to teach a class that is just the cheat plug.
Why not? What do we got to lose? All right, Ben, thank you very much for being with me and answering these questions. Thanks to everybody who chimed in with your questions. Very good questions, right? Very helpful.
Great questions. And thank you, everyone. Thank you for having me. I had a great time doing it. So thank you, everyone.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. All right, Ben?
Right on. Cheers, man.
All right. Bye. All right. That's it. Once again, thank you, everybody who chimed in with their questions. Thank you very much. That was a cool podcast. I mean, a lot of cool questions. Thanks to Ben, obviously, for being there and helping me out with the questions. Guys, I gotta do some housekeeping to close this. You know how it happens. Guys, Headshot Crew, we've got a ton of stuff coming down the pike. We're very excited. There's a ton of features coming in that we're working very hard on. So, give us a try. I mean, what have you got to lose? We got a free month in Stata right now. So if you sign up, you get a free month. So what? You got nothing to lose. Try us out. I guarantee you'll love it. It's the best community for headshot photography in the world. And we're expanding into portraiture. We got a strong portraiture track. So we're very focused on commercial and editorial portraiture. So if you're interested in that and headshots, just come on in. Join the crew. And I guarantee you'll love it. All right. I'll see everybody in there. That's it, guys. Thanks again to everybody who chimed in. Thanks to Ben. And I will see you guys. I'll talk to you guys next week. All right. Have a wonderful rest of day and go crush whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish right now. Go crush it. All right. Bye.